Chapter 16. Fleet, Corpheron. A storm breaks.
"That," said Orcadus, "is Macragge."
The navigator had received instructions from his admiral that whilst they were still in the warp, he should make regular reports on their progress. The appearance of the Ultramarine's homeworld, albeit through the misted lens of the Empyrean, was worthy of note, and so he had summoned her. The observation blister was a chamber on the same deck of the Wrathful as the bridge, and within walking distance. The room was usually reserved for formal gatherings when officers came together to formalise some business within the Saturnine fleet. Its grand, transparent dome afforded a view of space that lent gravitas to the matters at hand. In the warp, of course, it was strictly off-limits, and its eye was kept permanently closed. The eye was open, but the dome was masked with heavy filters that kept all but the most mundane wavelengths of light out of the blister. Admiral Kaminska faced away from the navigator and actually followed Orcadus's gaze through a mirror screen that offered a hazy representation of what he was seeing. To look at the warp, even filtered as it was, would be incredibly dangerous for her.
"If you could see it as I can," Orcadus hissed, allowing a reverent tone to colour his voice, "what wonders there are out in the void. There is beauty in the galaxy for those who can but see it."
"I'm happy staying blind," said Kaminska. The view through the filters and reflected by the mirror screen was heavily distorted, but she could make out a crescent-shaped mass of light hanging over the ship. Though she had no frame of reference, she had an impression of enormous distance.
"Macragge," muttered Orcadus. "See how it glows, the brightest constellation in this depth of the abyss. All those hard-working souls toiling at its surface, their combined life spark is refulgent to my eyes. Ultramar is the most heavily populated system in the whole segmentum, and the minds of its citizens are bright and full of hope. That is what I mean by beauty. It is a beacon, one that shines amidst the malice and bleakness of the Empyrean tide."
Kaminska continued to regard the dim mirror image of the warp through the minute aperture offered by the filters. Old spacefarers' tales were full of the effects the naked warp could have on a human mind. Madness was the most merciful fate, they said. Mutation, excruciating spontaneous cancers, and even possession by some malfeasant presence all featured prominently. Kaminska felt a flicker of vulnerability and was glad that only the navigator was there with her.
"Is this why you summoned me?" she asked, having little time or inclination for a philosophical debate concerning the Immaterium. Her mind was on other matters, namely the sudden revival of Motep and Cestus's meeting with a Thousand Sun. She hoped it would yield some good news.
"No,"
Orcadus answered simply, puncturing the admiral's introspection and pointing to a different region of the warp. It was a dim mass of glowing bluffs, like the top of endless cliffs reaching down into blackness. Above the cliffs was a streak of red.
"I am not well versed in reading the Empyrean tides, Navigator," she snapped, weary of Orcadus's eccentricities, which were ubiquitous amongst all the great navigator houses. "What am I looking at?"
"Formations like these cliffs are common enough in the Abyss," he explained, oblivious to Kaminska's impatience. "I am steering us well clear of them, and I am certain that our quarry has taken the same route. The formation above them, however, is rather more troubling."
"Another world, perhaps," ventured Kaminska. "There's plenty of new settlement out here near the fringe."
"I suspected that, but it is not a planet. I believe it is another ship."
"A second vessel?"
"No, I think it is a fleet."
"Are they following us?"
asked Kaminska, a knot of dread building in her stomach.
"I cannot tell. Distance is relative down here," the navigator admitted.
"Could it be the Ultramarines? Their legion was heading for Kalth."
"It is possible. Kalth could be its destination, I suppose."
"If not, then what is the alternative, navigator?"
Kaminska didn't like where this was going as the knot in her stomach became a fist.
"It could be another legion fleet," said Orcadus, leaving the implication hanging.
"You mean more word-bearers?"
"Yes,"
the navigator confirmed after a moment's pause.
Lord Corpheron of the Word-bearers scowled.
"He's behind schedule," he said.
Aboard the Infidus Imperator, he and his warriors made their inexorable course towards Ultramar, the great flagship leading the dread fleet of battleships, cruisers, escorts and frigates towards their destiny. The arch-commander of the Legion, favoured of Lorgar, was immense in his panoply of war. Seated upon a throne of black iron, he towered like an all-powerful tyrant, the surveyor of all his deadly works. Votive chains, festooned with tiny silver skulls and icons of dedication, arched from his shoulder pads to his cuirass. A spiked halo of iron arced across his mighty shoulders, fixed to his armoured backpack. The stout metal gorget, fixed around his neck, was forged into a high and imperious collar that bore the symbol of the Legion. The tenets of it were etched, ostensibly, across every surface of Cor Faron's armour in the Epistles of Lorgar. Parchments unfurled like ragged script-written pennants from studded pauldrons. Seals and scraps of vellum covered his leg greaves like patchwork. In the eyes of the arch-commander, there burned a relentless fervour that flowed outwards and ignited the room. It was almost as if any who fell beneath his glowering gaze would be immolated in righteous fire should they be found wanting. His voice was dominance and zeal, his word the dictate of the Primarch. This would be his finest hour, as it was written. 6 chapter masters of the Word-Bearers stood behind Cor Faron, each resplendent in their respective panoplies. They still managed to fill the immense council chamber of the Infidus Imperator with their presence. Above them curved a great domed roof hung with smoking censers. The floor was a giant viewscreen showing a stellar map of the space surrounding Ultramar.
"Our most recent reports indicate that Zadkiel was being followed," said Fescarel, master of the chapter of the Opening Eye. "It is possible that he is just showing caution." "He has the Furious Abyss," roared Cor Faron. "He should have been able to see off anything that stood in his way. Zadkiel had better know the consequences for us all if we fail."
Deinos, master of the Burning Hand chapter, stepped forwards.
"Lorgar shows Admiral Zadkiel all honour," he said.
In keeping with the name of his chapter, Deinos's gauntlets were permanently wreathed in flames from gas jets built into his vambraces.
"It was written that we will succeed." "Not," said Cor Faron measuredly, "that we will do so without great loss. Kalth will fall, and the Ultramarines with it. That is already decided. But there is plenty of scope for our Legion to lose a great many brothers, and we certainly shall, if Zadkiel cannot fulfil his mission." "My lord, surely Zadkiel makes his own fate. We should be minded only with the progress of our own fleet."
It was Rukis, the master of the Crimson Mask chapter, who spoke. The faceplate of his helmet was wrought to resemble a fearsome, red-skinned, snarling creature.
"I will not allow our brother to fail us," hissed Cor Faron,
intent on the stellar map and the alleged progress of the Furious Abyss.
"I had not wanted to use my hand in this matter, but it seems that circumstances allow no other recourse. Much is written of Zadkiel's success and its bearing upon our own. To prosecute the war on Kalth, we must risk nothing. Is that understood?"
The chapter master's silence constituted their agreement. Skolinthos, master of the Ebony Serpent chapter, broke the quietude once his ascent and that of his brothers was clear. Skolinthos's esophagus had been crushed in the early years of the Great Crusade, when it was the Emperor whom the Word-Bearers vaunted above all others. His voice crackled, sibilantly, through a vocal synthesizer on his chest, the honorific of his chapter somehow perversely apt, given his affliction.
"Then how might we assist the Admiral?" "There are still words newly written," said Cor Faron, "that you do not know of. They concern the warp through which we travel. We can reach Zadkiel even though the Furious Abyss lies many days ahead of us. Master Tenebron?"
Chapter Master Tenebron bowed in supplication behind his lord. The Chapter of the Void was probably the least respected among the Word-Bearers' Legion, for it was by far the smallest, with less than 700 Astartes. There was little glory in its history, used, moreover, as a reserve force that enacted its missions behind the front line. This grim, dishonourable purpose fell to the void, and Tenebron, their master, did not complain, for he knew that his chapter's true role was to create and test new weapons and tactics for the rest of the Legion. It had not gone unnoticed that Lorgar's most recent orders to Tenebron had concerned the exploitation of the Word-Bearer's psychic resources.
"I trust you will require the use of the supplicants," said Tenebron. "How many remain?"
asked Corpheron, votive chains jangling as he shifted in his throne.
130, my lord," Tenebron replied. 70 here on the Infidus, 30 on the Carnomancer, and the remainder are spread throughout the fleet. I have ensured they are kept in a state of readiness. They can be awakened within the hour."
"Get them ready," Corpheron ordered. "How many can we afford to lose?"
"More than half would compromise the masking of the Kelth assault," Tenebron answered humbly.
"Then be prepared to lose them."
"Understood, my lord. What will you have them do?"
Corpheron cracked his knuckles in annoyance. There could be no doubt that he had hoped everything would go more smoothly than this. Zadkiel's mission was supposedly easy. The assault on Kalth would be far more complex, with much more to go wrong. If Zadkiel could not fulfill his written role, then the problems at Kalth would be magnified greatly.
"Give me a storm," said the Arch-Commander darkly.
Tenebron led Corpheron down the supplicant chambers of the Infidus Imperator. The Arch-Commander had since dismissed the other masters to their respective duties, ignoring their obvious surprise at his bold stratagem. The Infidus Imperator was a great and mighty flagship that almost rivaled the immensity of the Furious Abyss. It took some time to traverse the proving grounds and ritual chambers, the ranks of word-bearers honing their battle skills with bolter and blade in the arenas. Down here, upon every surface, the word was ubiquitous. Sentences inscribed on bulkheads and support ribs, tomes penned by Lorgar on pulpits overlooking halls and seminary chapels, libraries of lore, the vessel was drenched in the Primarch's wisdom and zealotry. The ship had once been known as the Raptorus Rex, a vessel devoted to the Emperor, who had plucked Lorgar from Colchis and placed the word-bearers at his command. It was a temple to another more willing and appreciative idol now, the false Emperor of Mankind having been stricken from its corridors. Tenebron reached the narrow high chamber like a steel canyon where the supplicants resided. Held in glass blisters on the walls, each served by a bulky life support system feeding oxygen and nutrients, the supplicants slumbered. Curled up and naked, twitching with the force of the power held in their swollen, lacerated craniums, it looked like they were dreaming. Their eyes and mouths had grown shut. Some had no facial features at all, their bodies abandoning the need to breathe, eat, or experience externally. A trio of word-bearers' librarians saluted their chapter master as Tenebron examined the vital signs on a pict screen, slave to the individual life supports in the centre of the room. The librarians bowed deeply as Corpheron walked in and genuflected silently before him.
"Rise," he intoned, and the librarians obeyed. "Is everything in preparation?" he asked, directing the question at the chapter master.
Tenebron consulted the data on the pict screen, turned to his lord and nodded.
"Marshal the storm," he growled. "Let them be broken by its wrath."
The chapter master nodded again and proceeded to order his librarians to activate the cogitators hooked to the supplicant's blisters. Corpheron left Tenebron to his duties without further word. Up on the walls, the supplicant stirred, as if the dream had become a nightmare. Zadkiel arrived on the bridge as the storm broke. The vista below him was bathed in strobing hazard lights, as if lashed by lightning. Complicated symbolic maps of the warp shone on the three main view screens and indicated that it was in violent flux. Bridge crew, Helmsmaster Sakharov barking orders at them, bent over their pictures, faces picked out in the green glow of reams of scrolling data.
"The warp rebels,"
hissed Zadkiel.
"Perhaps not," muttered Ixthalon.
The chaplain, having left Reskiel to his pursuit of their stowaway, had been summoned to the bridge and stood alongside the command throne.
"These supplicants were recently animated. It was probably a foreshadowing of the Empyrean's current state of turmoil. I believe that a higher purpose is at work. Confidence, it seems, in our ability to prosecute this mission is waning."
Ixthalon was careful to keep the barb well hidden, but the implication at Zadkiel's ineptitude was still there. The Admiral ignored it. The warp storm and its origin was of greater concern to him at that moment.
Cor Pharaon? He wondered.
I can think of no other save our Arch-Lord who would intercede on our behalf.
Zadkiel sneered as another thought occurred to him.
It is Tenebron, no doubt, trying to claim for the Chapter of the Void that which belongs to the Quill.
He is ever ambitious,
Ixthalon agreed, keeping his voice level. Zadkiel assumed his position on the command throne.
It would be rude, Zadkiel sneered, to deny Tenebron his sliver of victory. It will be eclipsed utterly by our own. Helmsmaster Sakharov, he snapped, press on from a crag. Let the warp take the wrathful.
Cestus was thrown against the wall as the wrathful shuddered violently. He was heading back to the bridge in order to convene with Kaminska and the remaining Astartes when the storm wave hit. Debris was flung throughout the corridors. Medi bays were in disarray as desperate orderlies fought to hang on to the wounded. Armsmen were smashed against bulkheads, and ratings fell to their deaths as the wrathful pitched and yawed. A terrible metallic moaning came from the engine sections as the ship fought to right itself. Cestus could feel the structure flexing and straining through the floor as if the vessel was on the verge of snapping in two under the strain. The ultramarine made his way through the mayhem until he reached the bridge, blast doors opening to allow him access. The crew clung to their posts, Helm's Mistress Venkmeyer issuing frantic orders set against the unearthly calm of servitors running through their emergency protocols. Drenched in crimson gloom from vermilion alert status, the bridge looked bloody in the half-light.
"Navigator Orcadus, report!"
snapped Kaminska, gripping the sides of her command position as the shaking wrathful threatened to dethrone her.
"A storm," Orcadus's voice said over the bridge voxcaster, the navigator sounding strained. "Came out of nowhere!"
"Evade it!" ordered Kaminska.
"Admiral, we are already in it!" replied the navigator.
"Damage control to your posts!" bellowed Kaminska. "Close off the reactor sections and clear the gun decks!"
Cestus reached the admiral.
"This is the word-bearer's doing,"
he shouted against the din of warning sirens and frantic reports from the crew. Another wave slammed into the wrathful. Bursting pipes vented vapor and gas. Crewmen were thrown off their feet. A view screen was sheared off its moorings and fell in a shower of sparks and shattered glass, landing in the middle of the bridge.
"Orcadus, can we ride it out?"
asked Kaminska, her eyes on the ultramarine.
"I see no end to it, Admiral."
"Captain Cestus?"
she asked of the Astartes.
"If we drift here and ride it out, the furious abyss escapes,"
Cestus confirmed.
"There is no choice left to us but to drive through it."
Kaminska nodded grimly. If they failed, it would mean the destruction of the ship and the deaths of over 10,000 crew. Her order would condemn them all to their fates.
"Engage the engines to full power," she ordered. "Let's break this storm's back," she snarled with fire in her eyes. "We'll teach the warp to fear us!"
From within the confines of the isolation cell, Motep could hear the anarchy outside. He ignored it, poring over the reflective sheen of the polished gunmetal walls instead. A window of fate opened up to him as he channeled his powers. Panic reigned on the wrathful. He saw fire, men and women burning, thousands sacrificed upon the altar of hopeful victory. They became ghosts in his mind's eye, their penitent souls devoured hungrily by the warp and scattered into atoms until only residue remained. Death awaited on this ship. His death. The certainty of that fact instilled calm in him rather than fear. His place amongst the myriad strands of fate was fixed. The vista changed, and Motep's mind ranged beyond the wrathful and into the churning abyss. The furious abyss loomed through the haze of resolution as a new scene presented itself. The vessel was immense, like a city laid on its side and falling towards the wrathful. Thousands of gun ports opened up like mouths, the primed glowing barrels of magna lasers and cannon-like tongues ready to roar. The furious abyss was utterly hideous. A monstrosity of dark crimson steel, and yet the beauty of its majesty overcame any aesthetic offence. Motep drifted further across the gulf, through Urzart's reality. As his mind expanded, he could taste the warp, the endless flavours, sounds and sensations of the abyss, calling to him. probing tendrils pricked at his sanity, and the Thousand Sun attempted to disengage. He couldn't, and panic rushed into him like a flood. Motep mastered it quickly, recognizing at once that he was in peril. The warp had seen him, and it sought to drive his mind asunder. It showed him visions of destruction, the spires of Prospero aflame, and his legion cast into the warp. In another vista, he knelt before a throne of black iron in supplication before the icon of the word-bearers. Screams filled his ears, together with the howling of wolves. Motep clawed back some semblance of control. He fashioned the image of a cyclopean eye in his mind. It glowed with scarlet radiance, and as if following a beacon to safe harbour, Motep used it to guide himself away from the clutches of the Empyrean. He emerged at last, drained of all will, of all strength, and collapsed to the floor of the cell. The metal was cool against his cheek. Though hard and unyielding, it was the most invigorating salve he had ever felt. He had resisted, though the lines of fate had been laid open to him. Motep knew as he slipped into unconsciousness what the visions had been about. It was not a lure into madness. It was something far more sinister and invasive. It was temptation. "They are lost," said Zadkiel, smiling with malice. He looked up at the center view screen, showing little emotion as alarming numbers scrolled past the symbol representing the wrathful. He looked more thoughtful than triumphant. "Do we have any readings from their engines? Are they still void-worthy?"
"No readings," Sarkarov replied. "The storm is too strong."
"I have seen enough," Zadkiel said. His response was curt. "Continue at all speed."
"You won't wait until we are certain of the Wrathful's destruction?" counseled Ichthalon, a sliver of doubt evident in his voice at Zadkiel's order.
"No, I will not," answered the Admiral. "Our mission is to reach Macragge in time for Cor Feron's assault. I cannot tarry here in order to make certain of what is inevitable. We need to be out of this region and back on our way. Return to your chambers, Chaplain. Have the supplicants watch for the Wrathful's death throes. Even in a warp storm such as this, that many deaths should make some ripple."
"As you wish, my lord."
Ichthalon bowed and left the bridge. The furious abyss resumed its former heading in short order. Cor Feron's plan had worked in so far as they were undamaged by the storm. Whether it had also put paid to the Wrathful did not concern the Admiral. A petty creature might have been angry at his lord's meddling, but Zadkiel was sanguine. Let lesser minds worry on such things. The word would play out as written. Nothing else mattered.